Committee will come back to order. We are going to go to Senate File 1027. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. During the first couple months that we were here, we had heard from the various testifiers from the court system that we really did have to do something to fix the situation with the public defenders, because with the staffing problems that they had, they were literally in a position where the lack of public defenders were shutting down the court system, which of course is pretends nothing but bad. And in addition, we were running the risk of, because of the lack of the public defenders, we were running the risk of defendants demanding their right to a speedy trial, and then literally letting folks maybe out on the street that shouldn't be out on the street. So I think this committee did the best that they could in order to properly fund the public defender system, for now. And that was done in an era, frankly, when we, as the state of Minnesota, are really having some pretty significant funding problems across all state agencies. And yet we did manage to come up with the necessary funding, at least for now. And in my mind, what that did is it bought us a little bit of time. And since we began engaging in this system involving the public defenders, I have had a number of discussions with different folks in the judicial branch. I've talked to some public defenders. I've talked to some folks in law enforcement. And overall, there's been an expression of some dissatisfaction with the way the public defender system is currently being operated, and maybe some suggestions that maybe we could do better. The three main categories of the topics that I've had with folks revolved around, number one, the need to deliver public defender services in a more effective manner. And some folks seem to believe that that can be done at the local level as opposed to the statewide level as the current system is operating. The second category that I was approached on revolved around a dispute between the judicial branch, the public defender system, and Senator Harrington, you're over here.
Thanks.
And the counties as to who is going to pay for the various expenses that are incurred in the cases that are being handled, and what is the essentially the breakdown of those expenses. The third thing revolved around conversations that perhaps the public defender system as currently organized is not being operated on an optimal basis. And on the basis of those discussions, I decided that I would draft a bill in order to generate some discussion, some conversation. And before I describe the bill, I just want to give you an idea of one email that I received from a judge, in which he indicated that the perception was that indigents got better representation. He's talking about in the past now, when we had a county system rather than a statewide system. Perception that was the indigents got better representation than they do now. Lawyers actually met with clients outside of the courthouse and were generally better prepared. Most court-appointed counsel were private attorneys who were also practicing privately in criminal defense. The state public defender system went statewide in part because counties couldn't control costs. However, centralized services in the State Public Defender Board, unionizing, and district bureaucracy have added to overall costs of the public defender system to the point where the state system also cannot be properly funded. Perhaps only a few counties would, quote, opt out, that is the subject of this bill, opt out. The only way to find out is to pass the bills. But in some counties, more service could be provided for the same cost if the county is willing to accept some risk for extra costs if there are an unusual number of cases in any given year. So it's that kind of discussion and comment and emails that I have received from the court system that generated the thought in drafting the bill. Now, the bill as drafted, I'll just give you a very brief overview of it. And as drafted, what it does is it would authorize counties to opt out of the statewide public defender system for a two-year period. If they did that, the counties would be responsible for all costs associated with the representation of the offenders and would receive a portion of the state district public defense appropriation to the State Board of Public Defense. Subdivision 2 specifically calls for a two-year period. Subdivision 3 would require counties to agree to provide all court-ordered representation of indigent persons. Subdivision 4 would require a county that withdraws from the statewide public defender system to form an advisory board for a comprehensive plan for providing the court-ordered representation. Subdivision 5 requires the State Board of Public Defense to transfer an amount of a withdrawing county's share of the total state appropriation to the Board for District Public Defense. Subdivision 6 requires the Chief Appellate Public Defender to continue to represent indigent offenders in all appeals. Subdivision 8 requires an annual report detailing the withdrawal of the counties from the state public defense system. And that is a report that would come back to this committee and the mirror committee in the House. The Mr. Chairman and members, it is my intent in bringing this bill forward. It's my intent that I want to generate some discussion concerning the public defender system, both on a statewide basis and on a county basis. It is my intent that that conversation should occur in this committee. I can tell you I am not interested at all in forming a task force or anything like that. I think this committee and its staff is perfectly capable of entertaining this idea and this bill. At this point, I would indicate for the members and for those who are here and are interested in this bill that it is not my intention today to do anything other than to lay it over. Whether we pick it up again and move forward with it will entirely depend on the various members of this committee and the discussion that it generates. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would invite anyone that wants to express an interest in this subject to come to the table and give us their thoughts.
Thank you, Senator Newman. Are there testifiers that we have down before I ask for any other outside? Paul Burmeister, John Stewart. Okay, you want to come up and take a chair next to Senator Newman. Yes, Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When would Senator Newman like questions, I guess, when it's all done?
Senator Newman, would you like to have everybody give our members give questions now, during the time, or when it's all over with?
Mr. Chairman, whatever your pleasure is fine with me.
Okay. Anytime, then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Newman, the transfer, can you go through that with me in a little more detail, the transfer of state funding to the Willing County? For instance, use my county, one of my counties, Douglas County. How would those dollars be proportioned out, so I understand it clearly?
They would receive, if we go to subdivision 5 of the bill, that's where it talks about the state public defense board will transfer that county or group of counties' share of the state appropriation to the state public defense board. The percentages in the bill have not been calculated, but the idea is that whatever proportionate share that county or that group of counties, the bill also would allow a joint powers agreement to be formed so it could be more than just one county. And then that proportionate share would go, and I've forgotten the name of the agency, the state commissioner of management and budget would oversee the transfer of the funds.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So it says percentage of state total appropriation here. Would we be looking at a per county basis, per capita basis, maybe, or am I missing? Is that
candidly, I don't know how exactly it is computed, but I would rather guess that Mr. Kyer probably would know the answer to that question. Okay.
I wonder if Mr. Turner or Mr. Backus would have a response to that.
Mr. Chairman, members, I made a fiscal note request for the bill. We left it blank on purpose because we thought that if this ever did come to fruition, we'd be working with the Board of Public Defense on what would be the most equitable way to determine each county or group of counties share. And so I really can't say more than that. If this does go anywhere, we would be working intimately with Kevin Kyer.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Okay.
No, Mr. Chair, just a point of follow-up. I'm sure everybody would be interested in that figure. I mean, so however that could get narrowed down, maybe there'll be some testimony to that.
Okay.
Thanks.
So we have our testifier come up then and introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I am Paul Bullmaster. I'm the Rice County Attorney. My interests are really in the bill that was supposed to be the first here, but it does relate to this bill as well. Rice County has been involved in litigation where the public defenders have opted out of representation. One of those areas is in the representation of parents and CHIPS proceedings. And in litigation that we had with SLJ was the name of the case, as it went through, the public defender's position was it's not a mandated service that we have to perform. It's something the counties have to pick up. The court at the end of that case agreed with the public defenders and said, counties, you're going to have to pay, though they did invite the legislature to look at it and make a decision or clarify what their intent was. Was that something that the counties were to be left with back in the early 90s when they were making their transition to a statewide system away from the county system? So this bill of allowing counties to opt out, I guess, goes along with that, in that right now it's the public defenders who are opting out, and maybe we should give the counties the equal opportunity to look at those dollars, which I think would be critical to any county board. The big thing for county boards, I think, comes back to budgeting. We have a budget cycle, and for expenses to be dropped on us mid-year, creates holes in our budgets. We have to find those dollars somewhere. We don't simply raise taxes mid-year. We have to set our levies well in advance of the upcoming year. One of the things that currently the court has invited the legislature to decide is misdemeanor representation at the appellate level. That currently is in limbo to a certain extent. There is a case currently where the district court in Rice County has ordered the public defender's office to do the representation because the language under the old county system made it clear it was through any appeals. So that language appears to indicate the public defender duties of through appeals go with the duty of the public defenders. However, that is currently being litigated right now. In Morris, they said it hasn't been addressed yet. We're going to leave it to the legislature to decide who should be doing those misdemeanor appellate cases. And that's where I think in this opt-out provision, the counties will have to make a decision, and it's obviously not the county attorneys that are going to do that. It's the county boards. They're the ones who are going to have to make the financial decision. Is it cheaper for us to have this piecemeal sent back to us or to take it all over and hopefully come up with a comprehensive countywide system that will provide public defenders? As a county attorney, I would like to state that it is very important that we have public defenders. They are there for a reason, and that's to protect the rights of those individuals and to make sure that the system is being put to its burdens. If it's not, they will raise those issues with the court. I don't think there's a county attorney out there that would say we can do without public defenders, and I would encourage this committee to look very seriously at how are we providing these services. The question isn't whether these services are needed. The question is how are they going to be provided. Are they going to be provided through the general fund, or are they going to be provided through county property tax dollars? Right now we're having piecemeal shifts to the counties in unfunded mandates basically through litigation, and it would be better addressed, I think, in a legislative process, and I think that is the appropriate process to address it. So I thank the senator for bringing this bill to the forefront. I think it does show two different systems. Which one is better? I think the senator brought that out, that who knows? I mean, they found now that we've gone to a statewide system. Maybe that isn't the way to regulate and budget as effectively. Or maybe it was back with the county. But that's really the debate. Which system do we most effectively provide the services through, not whether the services are needed?
Good. Thank you, Mr. Burmeister. Any questions for Mr. Burmeister? Yes, Senator Latz.
Thank you. I worry about this legislature made a very substantial and significant decision to go with a statewide system in the force counties that were on their own to become part of the state system. And I think there were excellent public policy reasons behind that move, including efficiencies and the ability to provide appellate coverage for cases and expertise in that area. But I also, frankly, I worry about whether or not every county board when they're budgeting will have the level of understanding and commitment to constitutional principles to adequately fund the public defenders in a particular county, particularly if those public defenders are ones that don't just kind of go along to get along with the system. They are the rabble rousers by definition. They're the ones that stand against the founders' language, the tyranny of the majority in court and take unpopular positions. And you know, county boards make budgeting decisions. They're elected officials as well. And I really worry about putting that kind of power back in the hands of county commissioners, especially, frankly, in the smaller counties when people tend to be known much more closely and tightly within the legal community and the political community, more so than the populous counties in the metro area. I think it tells us a lot that we've got three former chief justices signing a letter here saying this is a bad idea. I'll note that it's not mentioned here, the letter we got from the Stoneman Law Firm, David Stoneman is, if I recall, the past president of the Minnesota State Bar Association, as well as the current chair of the State Board of Public Defense. So I guess there are a lot lot of reasons I'm worried. I understand you're a little bit worried about budgets and the courts making decisions, and frankly, we've squeezed the public defenders in our state budgets. And that's why they're making some decisions like they're not going to represent CHIPS provisions. Because we have an adequate amount of the public defenders as well in the states. I wonder if a county board would also would be any more dedicated to funding public defenders to handle CHIPS petitions when they're also funding the county attorney's office on the other side of the case. Because I think it raises a lot of questions, and I appreciate the comments that you made, but I'm really a little skeptical about whether it's the right direction to go.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, I don't think that you had yet arrived when we first got started, but I just wanted to bring to your attention that what we're doing today is just having another discussion. I've already indicated my desire to lay this bill on the table after today, but I am trying to generate some discussion. I know that the legislature has put a lot of time in on this statewide public defender program in the immediate past, but that doesn't mean that we can't necessarily improve on it, and I do believe that there are some problems. I want the committee to understand also that I agree with the Wright County Attorney in terms of his statement that public defenders are absolutely necessary in our system. And I say that not only as a practicing attorney, but also as a former public defender. I have handled, albeit a long time ago, I handled a lot of felony public defender matters, and I have great respect for them. The last comment to Senator Latz was, you know, the small counties. Just want to bring to your attention that there is the ability in the bill to form a joint powers agreement between various counties. Doesn't necessarily mean that's where they're going to go, but again, it's a matter of having a discussion, and then at the end of the day, it will be my intention to lay the bill on the table.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, could you, you made a comment about, or left me with a little feeling there might be a conflict with the county hiring both the prosecutor as well as the defense attorney for paying for both services. It went on for years. Can you tell me, give me a little idea what that might be that would concern you that much about it?
Sir Latz.
To the chair for commissions. I'm happy to do that. I think there is some very easy for a politician, elected county board officials, to be pro public safety and anti criminal and pro prosecution and pro law enforcement, because that's the most popular position to take. We all feel the pressures on here as legislators. I felt it on the city council too, and county boards, I'm sure, feel exactly the same kind of pressures. And so when they're making decisions about funding, I can't imagine that's not something that's factored in. And not everyone, you know, we're sitting on the Judiciary Committee, and we're part of the system staff, so we have a better sense of the important role that public defenders play in the constitutional priorities of our system. But I'm not sure that every elected official has that same appreciation of how important they are. And so when it comes to making funding decisions, my sense is that the prosecution and the law enforcement are more likely to get an easy time in funding, and if they get squeezed for dollars, the public defenders might not get as adequately funded. That decision around here too. We'll wonder if the state rep or senator that cuts the Department of Public Safety, but we've been cutting the Department of Public Defender's budget for years. So
And that's one reason why we're in exactly the position where they had to opt out of the CHIPS case, because it wasn't constitutionally mandated, or arguably statutorily mandated. So those are the kind of pressures that I worry about, and I don't know that it's an ethical conflict of interest in that sense, but I think in terms of allocating scarce resources, it sets up a potential problem for my perspective. So that's why I think it's better to have a statewide system with a statewide support given to the local public to understand their work. Forward is worth.
Senator Ingberg.
Just to follow up, and I appreciate that, Senator Latz, and I, because I do come from the area, and I've never hired a county to go, and I'm trying to put myself in the position of a county board member telling a defendant halfway through the case, or a hired public defender halfway through the a murder case, that we can't afford to do that anymore. I just can't imagine that even happening. I guess I'm trying to visualize something like that, and I'm thinking if it were about politics, that would be really a foolish political move to make on the county board's position to do that. So I'm sitting here trying to think. But you're saying prioritization is where you think it would be more popular with the enforcement part versus the defense.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Pullman, Hallmeister would like to address the issue that Senator Ingebretson has brought up.
Mr. Bullmaster.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I think the budget issue is always going to be an issue, whether it's at the state level or the county level. I haven't had the experience of being showered with money in these tight budgetary times. My experience has been that we too have to take cuts in the prosecutor's office, and in some counties it has been rather extensive, and we have to educate our commissioners, and that's really the issue. Just as this committee is set up to educate the senators on the importance of public defenders and making sure they're adequately funded, but what is occurring now is it's being shifted to the counties anyway. Right now, as you pointed out, thousands of cases were shifted to counties to provide those services. So it's already happening. What you're worried about is a reality today in those cases. And it's going to be a reality in the misdemeanor cases, possibly, depending on what the Senate and the House and the governor decide to do with what I think goes to the Senator Limmer's bill regarding who's to receive public defender services by the state public defenders. Decisions need to be made as to who's going to do it. And I think most counties have accepted that the state was going to be the state public defenders and take care of it at the state level. And I think they'd be more than happy to have the state continue to do that. Unfortunately, as I said, it's been a piecemeal opting out on the other side. Public defenders saying, we can't do this any longer. We're not going to do this. And again, shifting those thousands of cases to the counties at this point. So I don't disagree that there's an ongoing need to educate those policymakers who set the budget as to the importance of those services, and that there has to be a balance between, you know, good fiscal policy and providing the services that are necessary. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you can do both. And I think you pointed out, you know, ethically, I can't imagine a defense attorney, whether they're a public defender or a privately retained defense attorney, doing anything other than their best and being a zealous advocate. And irregardless of what the pay is or what they're receiving in compensation, that they would not go forward. There was a time in this state when it used to be voluntary work. In fact, in Rice County, the misdemeanors are currently being handled by volunteer public defenders that take those cases on without pay. And again, it's because nobody else will do it. And that's an area that it's clearly not the county's responsibility. So I'm not as concerned that the representative, to answer the senator's question, I'm not so concerned that the individual attorney wouldn't do their duty or do their job any more than I would be concerned about a prosecutor not doing their duty or their job because they're on a pay freeze. I think they will do their jobs. These are professionals, and their license and their ethics require that they do their best.
Further discussion? Senator Newman, was there a motion, or were you bringing this up for public discussion?
No,
Do we have more testimony?
Do we have?
I believe there's some others that would like to testify, Mr. Chair.
Coming in the middle of a discussion is, I don't get all the full picture. Is it Senator or Mr. Stewart? John Stewart, State Public Defender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name's John Stewart. I'm the State Public Defender. I've been a public defender in Minnesota since 1978, so I've seen a lot of the history that we're talking about here today. And I'd like to talk a little bit about how we got the state system that we have now, and then quickly make three points about what's working in the state system. You have got a letter from three of the retired Chief Justices, Chief Justice Magnuson, Chief Justice Keith, and Chief Justice Russell Anderson, who think that it would be a step backward to allow counties to opt out of the state system. These Chief Justices were involved in the development of the state system, and they too have seen a lot of history. I'm going to flesh that out a little bit. Up until 1989, it was an all-county funded system. And depending on the property tax base and on the priorities in the counties, there were huge variations in how services to the court system were provided and public defense. For instance, if you were a judge, whether you would have a law clerk or not, or whether you would have a library with certain books or not, would depend on county funding. And it came about in the late 80s that the courts decided that the backup for district court judges ought to be more uniform, and also that the state system of public defense would provide more uniform service to people regardless of where they lived. And in fact, at that time, there was a position paper by the Association of Minnesota Counties in which the Association of Counties said the state should bear the responsibility to assure an equitable level of judicial services to all persons in the state, regardless of where they may happen to live. Just to give you an example, in 1967, the U.S. Supreme Court decided that juveniles charged with delinquency should have a lawyer. And 13 years later, in 1980, House Research did a survey of the state to see how that was going. They found that the rates of giving a lawyer as a constitutional right to these juveniles ranged between 100% in some counties down to 6% in other counties. And there was everything in between. There were counties at 10%, 20%, 80%. And a third of the kids that had been committed to Red Wing had been sent there on cases where they didn't have a lawyer. So that's how it was decided that it would be a good idea to have the state take care of the representation that's required by the Constitution. So now I'd say to you that the state system that you have now is cost effective. We provide service on every type of case in all 87 counties for under $400 a case. I would like to indicate to you a couple of situations where I think if the counties opted out and took this responsibility, they would have a tough time. One thing that, and you know, it would not help the predictability of the county budget if some of these things were to occur. For instance, co-defendants with conflicts in major cases. We had a case where we had 40 plus felony drug defendants in War Road, Minnesota. Now, if that county had to find the lawyers for that, that would be a problem. But we're organized on the judicial district basis, not county by county. There's 17 counties in that district, in the 9th district, and we were able to pull people together to handle those cases. We had 30-some guys charged in a jail riot case in Rochester. Again, public defenders from around the state, not just people who were in that county. We had a murder case of a woman who ran a bait shop in Aiken, where 5 guys were charged. Well, you know, Aiken is a very small and it's a rather poor county. We got lawyers in from Crow Wing County. We got lawyers in from Itasca County to handle that case. So that's the type of coverage that you get based on a state system. Now, take a look at how, imagine you're a county-funded contracting lawyer under the proposed opt-out system, and the county offers you, the lawyer, an opportunity to reach in the hat and take 10 cases. You're going to do all of these 10 cases for $400 a piece. Okay, so you're going to get $4,000 for whatever is in the hat. You reach in, and your first case is a shoplifting case. You go, well, okay, that's all right. Second case, driving after suspension. Okay, I can deal with that. Third case, you reach in, oops, it's criminal sexual conduct case, or it's a homicide case. Now, you and that county are in a lot of trouble as to the budget to handle that big case. We have a lot of cases now around Minnesota that have DNA evidence. We've been working on a homicide case on the Iron Range with over 5,000 pages of lab reports. So, again, think of that from the point of view of that county-funded lawyer. Similar arson cases, similar gunshot residue cases, the source code of the intoxilizer, a lot of stuff that would be hard for that county lawyer. Finally, another situation that would be hard is the defendant who has multiple counties involved with him. A typical situation there would be somebody that takes somebody else's checkbook and they drive around the metro area and they forge checks in Hastings and St. Paul and Woodbury and Minneapolis. Okay, pretty soon you got 4 or 5 counties interested in this person. Because we're organized on a district level and a state level, not on a county level, we can handle people that have multiple counties. Another thing to think about in this regard is that half of our lawyers are private lawyers that work for us part-time, and right now they donate over 40,000 hours a year that they don't get paid for to getting the job done. So some question whether contract lawyers for the county would be motivated to give the extra time that our private lawyers that work for us on a part-time basis put in. In Douglas County, for instance, Neil Johnson works out of Osakis, and he puts in a lot of hours. But he knows that if he has a big case, he can get another lawyer to help him from Ottertail or Stearns County or someplace else in the 7th District. This brings me to the second point, that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. We can do things together that 87 counties separately couldn't do. For instance, we assign cases across county and across district lines. We provide training to our lawyers from the most basic to the most high tech. Last year, we had 33 lawyers do a program on handling DNA cases that took them 4 weekends. And now they are available to take DNA-related cases anywhere in the state. We have backup professional support staff. Investigation used to be a separate expense for the counties, but we take care of that. That's included in that $400 per case. You get an investigator that works for us that does that. So I'd say the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and I'd say that we are somewhat serving the state like the state patrol. You get consistency, you get professionalism, you get accountability, you get the ability to handle a major situation. And certainly the legislative auditor, when they studied us last year, felt that we had made an improvement over the old county system. Now, I believe, and I've been in this a long time because I want public defenders to do a good job. I think we are doing a good job, especially if you look at what happens in some of the locally run systems around the United States. Right now, in New York, Michigan, and Florida, locally based public defender systems are going through class action suits based on not protecting people's constitutional rights adequately. In Illinois, there's a county system in a state where 20 people have been exonerated off of death row by DNA evidence. So I don't want Minnesota to be one of those states where you see some guy get out of prison after 15, 18, 20 years because DNA says, well, the justice system made a mistake, you got the wrong guy. That's happened a lot in Illinois, and it's thank goodness, and I won't say it could never happen, but thank goodness it doesn't hasn't happened here in Minnesota. Iowa, the state has run out of money to pay their local contract attorneys. So the local contract attorneys are packing up the cases and taking them back to the courthouse and turning them back in because the money that was supposed to fund the local contracts evaporated. So here we are. We have trained, accountable people working consistently across the state, handling cases at $400 apiece, everything. I would say, in conclusion, that the big problem that the legislative auditor documented about us last year was, quote, public defender workloads are too high. That's because we know that you've been short of money. We know it's been necessary, but we've been cut. Since 2008, we've lost 16% of our lawyers. That's why we're having some of the things come up that have led to the discussion we're having today. I would say that our system is not broke. It's just running short of gas. And you don't want to go and rebuild the engine when all you really need to do is to put a little more gas in the tank. We weren't having these problems 4 and 5 years ago. But since we've lost 63 lawyers across the state, that makes a dent. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Be glad to answer any questions as best I can.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that testimony. You use the analogy of this. You'd like to see it running similar to what the state patrol does, and I understand what you're talking about, but let me run this scenario past you. The state patrol, I believe, and it's an original organizational years of way before you and I are in the system, was put out there to assist local units of government with the Highway Safety Act. What would your thoughts be with regards to, and I know this is a place where we compromise, St. Paul is a place of compromise, how would you feel with a system where you would have state public defenders assisting local units of government on those large cases that local units of government couldn't handle, similar to what the State Patrol does now with Reconstruction, or what the BCA does now with DNA investigating murders? Now, in Douglas County, we don't have a murder every year, so you could go 10 or 15 years without a murder. Would something like that work? I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I could see I mentioned the State Patrol without knowing enough about it. But my point, I guess, is anywhere in the state, you see one of those dark red cars, you know what you're going to get in terms of knowledge and service and professionalism. And you can go across county lines. You don't see... I've had the misfortune to be speeding a couple times in my life, and I didn't see them screeched to a halt when they got to a county line. They went ahead and said, you know, Mr. Stewart, you've been going, 68 and a 55, here's your ticket. And they crossed a county line, okay? And that's what I'm trying to say. We can do that too. Now, with respect to just servicing the major cases the way you're talking about, we do that. But an awful lot of court systems run mixed calendars of big and small cases. You're also talking about adding a layer of administration into this. I mean, I see all these counties are supposed to generate their own board to administer the local money. Then they have to meet and make policies. Right now, in the state system, 2% of the money goes to administration. 98% of the money goes to client services. So if you go to having a mixed system, I'm interested in what you say, but one thing I can see right off the bat is that you're going to add administrative costs. You're going to have the county public defender administrator and the state public defender administrator, and the county board and the state board. And, again, I would just have to say respectfully, we weren't here with these problems 4 and 5 years ago. We just don't have enough gas in the tank.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Any further testimony? Mr. Holmgren?
Mr. Chair.
Thank
Senators,
you.
Good
Welcome
afternoon.
To the committee.
I'm Steve Holmgren. I'm the Chief Public Defender in the 1st Judicial District, and I've had the good fortune to be a public defender now for more than 25 years. And actually, that's the reason why I'm here today, is that I'm old enough where I actually participated in the old county system as a public defender and have carried through today as a public defender. And it's my belief, honest, strong belief, that to move back to the county system would be a step backwards, a giant step backwards for not only for public defense, but the criminal justice system in general. In some ways, I think the old days of public defense is looked back with sort of a romantic view, with all sort of romanticism. I think a lot of times it misses the details of what actually happened back then. The reality of the system I began in was that counties paid us. We were paid a salary, and that's it. We didn't receive any training. We didn't receive any support staff. More often than not, we would go out and act as our own investigators. We would act as our own paralegals. I'd do my own secretarial work. There wasn't very little, if any, coordination of efforts. What would generally happen is we wouldn't know what our fellow contractors were doing. And it really was, in my view, an inefficient system and wasn't really conducive to quality results. I've heard some of the early testimony here today, and I'm glad to hear that. I think there's general agreement that quality is really important when it comes to criminal justice. Of course, that's because the adversarial system that we work in expects that both sides of an issue, both sides of a case, be thoroughly prepared, and that through thorough preparation and presenting the case, that justice can be arrived at. In my view, what that requires is not only training and skill, but also access to the same sort of resources that the prosecution has. And my point is we didn't really have that in the old days, in my view. One thing that also I think is different today than it was 25 years ago when I started is that this is high volume work. It was higher volume back in those days, but today it's considerably higher. It's also a lot more complicated than it was, in my view. If you look at the way the world has advanced in 25 years, just think of how technology has changed in recent years. The technology law enforcement uses is much more complex, much more involved, and it requires not only prosecution to understand it, but also for the defense lawyers to understand it. Think of how forensic science has advanced in recent years. DNA is now becoming commonplace. This is complicated stuff that requires training and skill for everybody involved in the system to understand. It's also much more difficult today, in my view, to resolve cases than it ever was. Someone told me that in the last 20 years there's been 86 or more sentencing enhancements. And that sounds about right to me. Sentences are much more severe today than they were 20 years ago when we started. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying it makes it much more difficult to resolve cases. judges also have less discretion than they did. In recent years, a major issue that's occurred is now that there are collateral consequences to criminal convictions. In the old days, when we started, there was no internet. The biggest thing you had to fear as a criminal defendant was that the local beat writer would come down and put your name in the local county paper. Today, the world is completely different. All of those convictions are on the internet and available for everyone to see, and this impacts defense lawyers and their ability to do their job. And the problem is that we know that our clients have to continue to function in the world today. They have to be able to find work, they have to be able to find housing, and we're constantly working to try to find ways to try to minimize the collateral consequences so folks can continue to be productive. In my view, the statewide system allows us to do a much better job. We hire people today based upon their qualifications, not necessarily because of who they know or where they live. We train them, we supervise them, we provide them with support staff who can do the work much cheaper in a lot of ways than we could as lawyers doing our own investigation, our own paralegal work. We provide them with access to legal resources. We provide them with mechanisms to share information. We've got brief banks available for folks so that if a public defender in one part of the state writes a brief, that brief can be accessible to public defenders in other parts of the state. So we don't constantly reinvent the wheel. We have discussion networks available for folks to be able to talk over issues with other public defenders. Not only do we have resources available that weren't available back in the day, but we now have a statewide trial team, which makes us much more efficient. Our trial team folks are trained in forensic and science and complex issues. They can swoop in on the case, handle part of the case, handle scientific issues, and not burden the local public defender with having to learn complex science. One of the other factors that's involved in the state system is the fact that public defenders now readily move across county and district lines. Frequently, what we'll find is a situation where a county may only have one public defender available, but we'll have a conflict. We'll have multiple co-defendants in a case. Maybe there are five people charged. And the statewide system allows us to send resources, send additional public defenders readily to those counties to handle those types of cases. Similarly, if people are in trial, or if they call in sick, we have people now to be able to go and send out and help to cover those calendars for those folks who aren't available. I could go on, but I hope that you get my point. I strongly believe that the system we have in effect today is far superior to the old system that I started in. We do a much better job today, in my view. And that not only benefits the citizens of the state, but also to the criminal justice system as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one question. If I could just ask you your thoughts on the DNA that's been brought up a couple of times. A county contracted defense attorney versus a state defense attorney. How would either one of them handle DNA? The DNA, of course, would be coming from the scientists from the BCA that you'd be drawing from either way. Either the county or the state employee would draw from that. Would that be a real big difference? Would there be a real big difference?
Well, the way we, until we formed the trial team, Senator, what we would do normally, we would have to hire out an expert. We'd have to find an expert to look at the DNA results and explain to us what it meant. So we would have to hire outside experts to be able to look at it and tell us that. Today, with the trial team, we're able to refer that to our people who have been trained in DNA and have them tell us what, in fact, is the test results mean. So that we're, essentially what we're doing is doing it in-house now rather than having to spend additional money to go outside. Doesn't mean that in a specific case we may still have to go outside, but considered incredibly complex. But that's the difference that I would see. If you were a contract attorney, you would probably have little choice but to go outside of the state system to hire somebody to interpret the results. But if you're a state, if you're within the state system, we handle the bulk of that now internally. Does that answer your question?
Sir, your presence.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one of the comments that was, I think, you know, I can certainly agree with is the statewide response team. That seems to make good sense. And you have the training within the state system, and I've talked to a couple of the public defenders. You talk about being able to respond to multiple defendant-type cases and things like that. That certainly would be a plus, it would seem to be, for the state system. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Newman?
I don't know if there's any other testifiers, Mr. Chairman. I do know that we have covered the issues of the quality of the service involved in the statewide public defender system. I do know that there had been some concern or discussions regarding the dispute or disparity over the expenses incurred in criminal cases as between the judicial branch, the public defender system, and the counties. And I just want to make sure, Mr. Chairman, that if there's anybody here that wishes to just address that, that they would have that opportunity before we lay this matter on the table.
Thank you, Senator Newman. Anyone in the audience wish to make comment regarding that concern?
Very well, Mr. Chair, then it would be my desire at this time to lay this matter on the table.
Senate File 1027 is laid on the table. Members and audience, we're going to get into a discussion regarding the bill that I have. We were originally going to start earlier and be the first bill. I got tied up in another committee on a bill presentation, and we're not going to vote on the bill that I'm going to have. It's going to be a discussion. I'm going to present a number of amendments for all to consider. We may be voting on it as early as tomorrow, or we have very little time left before deadline, or I mean before the spring break. So what I'd like to do is get this discussion going. The purpose of the discussion is that we have a lot of new members on our committee. And public defenders, it's in some ways they're kind of a mystery to many of us because they work with clients, and much of that work is done, as we know, quickly. It's I believe that they are in many cases overburdened, and yet at the same time, we if we're going to satisfy any constitutional mandate, I think it's worthy of us to be careful to study the ground before us before we walk, and I want to have this discussion, and that's why we're purposely working cautiously in this area, and we want to make sure that in a time of budget constraints that if we just have a little money to work with, well, then we want to spend it correctly. I'm going to move down to the testifying table. Senator Newman's going to take over the helm here, and I can begin. So bear with us.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Senate File 952 is an attempt to make some modifications to the public defense system in order, hopefully, to save some money and at the same time help define their job But before we make, as I mentioned before, before we take any formal action on it, I'd like to have a full vetting of this bill and have a discussion of the role of public defender. Senate File 952 recognizes that there's been a great deal of discussion and sometimes even confusion about public defenders and the role they serve. We all know that it's a constitutional mandate that public defendants who cannot afford an attorney, that one would be afforded them under the rights under our Constitution. While we know that from kind of a public school textbook definition, that's about all we really know in many cases. And it gets a little more complicated as we begin to study not only the important role that public defenders have, but at the same time, we get very concerned that if we do not have adequate resources to the service they provide, we may be held in violation as a state of the Constitution. In 2010, the Office of the Legislative Auditor issued a report on public defenders and its system, and the public defenders also came forward with a proposal earlier this year. Senate File 952 is before us, and I would like you to follow along. Section 1, this provision limits the appointment of a public defender in cases where the prosecutor will not be charging an individual with a crime that will require a jail or prison sentence. We've seen similar language in the past. For example, Senator Moi, who is the chairman of this committee, had language in her Senate File 409 in 2009 that was similar in this concept, showing the desire to limit eligibility. But this, in some way, does make sense. The person who will be responsible for making the charges against the individual should know whether or not they will be charging a crime that will have jail time. And, of course, petty misdemeanors do not have jail time, nor are they technically considered crimes under Minnesota statute. Section 2 was developed after talking with Senate counsel, Mr. Backus. This section, I believe, makes a little more sense also, because Section 1 clarifies the right to a public defender in the criminal code, and this corresponding section would be placed in Chapter 611, which is the law that covers the rights of the accused person. It allows a prosecutor to indicate to a judge that it's in the interest of justice that the accused person in a particular case not to be incarcerated if convicted for a misdemeanor, and then gives the judge discretion to agree that the prosecutor's to that prosecutor's proposal. If the prosecutor and the judge agree, then the defendant is not eligible for a public defender. And if convicted of the misdemeanor, the defendant may not be incarcerated for the offense. Section 3 comes from a recommendation from the legislative auditor that the legislature may clearly define and update what the standard is for eligibility for appointment of a public defender. That report, the legislative audit report, did not specify that those standards are what those standards are supposed to be, but instead it leaves it open for debate. There are many ways to deal with that eligibility standard, and for the actual guidelines in the bill, 211 to 215 is a starting point for discussion. If a person has been accused of a crime, should we treat the individual differently based on the level of the crime and the amount of income they have? Maybe it's better to have them all start out on the same level, regardless of the penalty that's actually charged by the prosecutor. Others have suggested a tiered system so that, depending on the level of the penalty, the percentage of income in relation to the poverty guidelines moves because of the amount of work required by defense counsel in relationship to the other or each of the penalties. Additionally, there's been some question about whether we recognize individual income or household income. We don't really have a lot of direction on the part of case law. At least I'd like to move perhaps away from that means-tested government benefit. It's another way to look at it. These terms can seem ambiguous, and particularly when we've been increasing eligibility for other government benefits over recent years. Other language changes in Section 3 are intended to clarify that a court shall make a determination, not just an inquiry, of financial eligibility. I think that's something that would help tremendously. That is the responsibility, going to line 227, which is the responsibility of the defendant to disclose changes in their financial circumstances when they occur, that a uniform financial statement form be used throughout the state, and if the original public defender appointed by the court is no longer available, his or her replacement will have access to that financial statement. The court may not appoint an appellate public defender, either if the defendant is financially able to get a private attorney but refuses to do so. That a defendant who refuses to execute a required financial statement or refuses to provide information necessary to determine financial eligibility waives the appointment of a public defender. It's vitally important that we know the financial statement of individuals. And that is not an all or nothing situation, but a public defender copay system might also be considered. We'd like to give judges flexibility to require a defendant to be able to pay at least part of the copay instead of either requiring the entire amount or waiving it entirely. Section 4 includes further clarifying language. As many of you know, current law, if you look at lines 331 through 34, requires that a person who is employed or who becomes employed reimburse the state for the cost of public defender. We'd like to clarify this section to include those other circumstances so that, again, the defendant's entire financial picture is part of the decision on whether he can or should be required to reimburse the state for the cost of the public defender. On page 4, the language beginning on line 4.4, actually relates to the repealer. I believe this is an out-of-date table. It refers to what percentage people should be required to pay. But from what we've heard, it would be better to remove this entire section, particularly because it seems that not all courts even use it now. And it would be better to give courts discretion to look at the complete financial picture of the defendant. You have to forgive me for reading much of this. I'm usually better at presenting, but my day has been very, very full. But this bill would bring up, I'm sure, a lot of discussion. And I think it's going to be needed in order to consider where we go with the public defense system in the state of Minnesota. I'm also going to introduce and have, if people would care to examine at least one amendment. Is it just one amendment that I have? The A1 amendment, and that does go back to a previous introduced consideration of the tiered qualification standard according to poverty guidelines. It's similar to the one that we're finding in the other body that has been included in their finance bill. And it's important for us to have this discussion as a committee because the House has put a few of their policy decisions in the bill, in their finance bill, and it's important for us to be grounded in the discussion. So as we make our version or consider it at all, we should be better versed in it and familiar with the concepts before us. So, Mr. Chair, I stand for any discussion, or I really would like to get some reaction from those that follow this area of law, public defenders and observers of the court, to see if any of these ideas might work.
Senator Limmer, before we call up testifiers, is it your desire to move the A1 amendment at this time?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to move it, but I will lay it on the table before we end. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time. We have to be many of us have to be at another place at 4:30. And so we will continue this discussion maybe as early as tomorrow. I need to reacquaint myself with our schedule for tomorrow. I've been told we probably will have some time to expand this discussion.
Okay.
So
I'm being told, Senator Limmer, you are correct, and the whispering in my ear is incorrect tomorrow. It is Thursday, isn't it? Senator Latz, you may be correct. We do have some folks maybe that want to come and testify, and as long as we have Senator Limmer available tomorrow, is there anyone that wants to come forward and testify at this time on the bill? Mr. Kier?
Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, my name is Kevin Kier. I'm the Chief Administrator for the Board of Public Defense. Just two very quick issues, because I know you're running out of time. On page 2 of the bill, we do have some concerns about the 150% level. There are a number of counties where that number is lower in terms of eligibility. Secondly is line 2.11 of the bill, it refers only to the defendant income as opposed to household income, which is what's on the form right now. And there is some case law in this area. There's a case called State v. Jones that was decided in 2009 where the court indicated that you could, in fact, take into account the income and assets of people who are living in the household. So that would be a little bit of a concern to us, because I think you may have some counties out there where, A, the 150% level may be a little high, and B, you're not counting the household income, you're only counting the defendant's income.
Any questions from members for Mr. Kier? Senator Latz.
Thank you. Mr. Kier, so are you suggesting that the current standards, or the proposed standards here, may result in more appointments of public defenders than the current standards?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Latz, okay. I think there are counties where it could, yes. The first one that comes to mind is Dakota County, which uses a modified system of what's in the A1 amendment. That one I know of. I know there are a couple of counties in the 9th District where that threshold is lower as well. I know there are some others around the state. So, good, yes.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Kier. Mr. Bullmaster wants to testify, I believe.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Limmer.
Well, Mr. Kier is still here.
Yes.
I think Mr. Kier has seen the A1 amendment. And I just wanted to ask him some questions. On the A1 amendment, if we considered the variated proposal that has specific references to poverty guidelines, but it's at 125% and then later 150% depending on income, the question that I might have is, has that been sustained in the courts as a valid standard?
Mr. Kier.
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't believe that it has, only because we haven't had that standard in law. But as the author said, the Legislative Auditor's Office recommended that you have some specific guideline. And it's not in the first, in the A1 amendment, but there is always a judicial option, if you will, that if somebody can't afford an attorney, that the court could appoint. And I believe that that's the operative language that you would need to continue to have in there in order to make this constitutional. Now, I got a lot of lawyers that work for me that can tell you better than that, but my history with this in the legislature is that's been the issue. So as long as you're not touching that piece of the eligibility statute, you can consider these other items. So,
anything further from Mr. Kier or Senator Limmer?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kier. One moment. Senator Ortman. Mr. Kier. Senator Ortman.
Is what you're saying is that about when someone, a defendant, should be appointed an attorney or one should be appointed for them. But the court would then always reserve the authority to override that with that language that you're talking about. And with that proviso, then we meet the constitutional test as far as no.
Mr. Carr.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ortman, that's my understanding from the discussions we've had previously in the last, I mean, this issue is not new, obviously. I mean, it's been bandied about here since I've been coming here, and that's a long time. But as we've moved forward on these issues in the past, that's been my understanding.
Senator Ortman.
Thinking about this rather than just going back to the judicial
order. Senator Lamer. Well, Senator Ortman, the reason why we're not voting on it kind of reflects my confidence level. but it also reflects my caution and my respect for the courts. And we really should have an open discussion like we're having more often, because this area of law, for probably just a lack of, maybe a lack of excitement or a lack of, pardon me to the public defenders, but on the part of legislators, this area of law gets very, very tiny for all of the other things we look at. And I think it's been an area that we've kind of overlooked. And so I think it's important for us, especially in light of the budget problems that the court has, that we really are forced to dig into this area of law. And I'm learning as I'm going. I know that most of our members are new to the committee, and it's important for us to move cautiously, but we still have to move forward. Because I'm convinced that the public defenders, at least in this particular moment in time, do not have the resources to handle the existing workload that they have. And we need to examine how we can assist, and it's not just assisting the public defenders, but ultimately it's assisting the citizen that may need to avail themselves of the service. And that's why I'm presenting the hearing the way we are right now, and wanting to embed it a little bit.
I'm going to push just a little bit at this point. We have to be out of here at 4:30. Mr. Pullmaster is here waiting to testify, and I just assume he didn't have to come back tomorrow. So if you please, Mr. Pullmaster. I've got you. You're on. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Paul Bowmaster. I'm the Rice County Attorney. We're actually in support of looking at the eligibility. There's two parts of eligibility, though. One is the financial eligibility. Then we move into the service that you're looking for. One concern I have is it talks about misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, felon. It doesn't talk about delinquencies or other services, which are that second part of eligibility. What are you here applying for? Why do you need the public defender services? The court has asked this body, the legislature, to address the issue in SLJ with regard to representation of parents. And as we heard from the state public defenders, they think it's important that the state public defender office do these services of public defenders. And representing parents, particularly in conflict cases, you have, and oftentimes in a CHIPS case where you'll have, or a termination case, two parents, generally. You will also have multiple children. And obviously, from the testimony of the state public defenders, they've made it clear they're much more capable of dealing with those multiple type cases where you have multiple defendants. So that should be made clear that, and in SLJ, they asked the legislature to make clear what your intent is. Should the public defender's office do those cases that have been currently now shifted to counties and are now being funded through the property tax dollars in each county, except for Hennepin?
I think you also have been asked in the State versus Morris to decide who's going to pay for the appellate work on misdemeanor cases. And again, eligibility. And in Morris, they did look a little bit at the issue of, does it matter that you're only going to lose your liberty for 10 days or 110 months? In Morris, they said, no, you have a liberty stake here. You're entitled to one meaningful appeal. You're entitled to representation. So I'm not sure that they would make that distinction. And as counsel has said, he's got a lot of attorneys in his office that will be arguing that maybe someday if this is passed, as to whether or not that constitutes a violation of due process or their constitutional right to representation based on a moving standard depending on how much liberty is being taken from them. And Senator Ortman and Senator Limmer, I think you are saying exactly what the question would be litigated is, can we make that distinction? Is there a constitutional basis for doing what this purports to do, is kind of decide how badly you need counsel based on how poor you are. I don't know if it would be upheld. It has not been addressed. We don't have it in the state. Therefore, I won't speculate. But I can almost guarantee you it will probably be an issue of litigation into the future, as we found ourselves now in litigation on that other eligibility issue. Under 611.14, 611.18, I think they all need to be addressed together, and the statute needs to be cleaned up, for no better term, from when we did have the county system. And it needs to be very clear as to what the responsibilities are of the county system and the state system. If there are two systems to be compromised on, then who's going to do what? Simply patchwork, I think, is why we have gotten to where we're at now, where we're over the last 2 years, my office has been up to the Supreme Court on numerous cases dealing specifically with who's going to do this, since the State Public Defender's Office has decided not to. And when we have those disputes, I think it's best done at the legislature, as the senators pointed out, having this open discussion where we can decide what is the best process in determining eligibility standards and who's eligible for those services based on what the charges are or what situation they're in. And I think this is a good start, and it does allow that discussion.
Members, you have 1 minute to ask Mr. Bowmaster.
I'm looking at the clock, going, okay.
Any questions that you may have? Is there anyone else in the room that feels a need or desire to testify? We really are running short of time, and I apologize.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I had hoped to ask Mr. Kyer a question following his statement, and if he wouldn't mind answering the question. One of the things I'm concerned about, Mr. Kyer, and I'm guessing you might be too, is that this might place, I wonder, would it place the public defenders in a very awkward position where they have to be advocating not to take certain cases in order to preserve resources to take other cases. Do you see that potential, or do you think that who will advocate for whether or not someone meets the standard, or will that be left to the defendant?
Mr.
Chairman and Senator Ortman, I guess I don't see any difference than in the system that you have now versus putting the specific standards in, and I think the legislative auditor found that as well. Again, because you have that judicial discretion, you know, if in fact someone can't afford an attorney. So I'm not sure that it really makes any difference whether or not you have that. Just to be clear, Mr. Chairman, one of the things we talked about in the House on this discussion was this. We believe under the A1 would give the court a tool to have a more consistent basis on which you are determining eligibility statewide. Okay, and some of the discussions we've had with the judicial branch is, I think there's a concern there. I think the other thing you got to remember is in that off legislative audit report, they found that the vast majority of clients were in fact indigent and were eligible for public defender services. So at some point, the question becomes is, how much time and effort do you want to put in for less and less of a return? So having said that, the A1 amendment, I think, addresses at least what the auditor's concern was. But, you know, obviously you folks are free to do what you want.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, on Senator Erdman's point, though, in other words, whether under this bill or what we've got now, you still have the occasional, I don't know how often it comes up, occasional conflict, I presume, between whether you are pushing to get somebody representation versus you don't have the money to do it, so pushing away, you don't have a problem with it either way.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, that doesn't go on. It just doesn't. You know, I think I've testified in front of at least this committee and in the House is, you tell us who we're going to represent and we'll represent them. Now, granted, we have some financial issues which you are all well aware of, but that just doesn't go on. I will tell you that where there are people who are clearly not eligible, public defenders have brought those to the court and have challenged those, because we have no interest in representing folks that don't qualify. To us, that's a waste of resources and precious resources that are better reserved for poor folks. So,
thank you, Mr. Kyer. Senator Limmer, what is your desire with respect to your amendment and your bill?
Mr. Chair, we're going to hold Senate File 952 over for tomorrow. We're going to add it to our agenda, and we'll continue the discussion and a possible vote on one or all provisions of the bill and amendment.
Okay, Senate File 952 is held over, as well as the amendment, until tomorrow. There being no further business before this committee, we stand adjourned.